Welcome to the Independent Curriculum Group's Partner Podcast. The Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast highlights the work of our partner schools in the development of contemporary education as they embrace and enact the ICG's principles of independent curriculum, which you can find on our homepage at independentcurriculum.org. The Independent Curriculum Group is a consortium of over 150 schools around the world interested in building stronger, more effective programs. The ICG helps schools envision, design, implement, and evaluate school-generated, mission-aligned curriculum. Because independent curriculum is created in individual schools by teachers to serve their very own students, independent curriculum is innovative by definition. We hope that you will find this podcast both interesting and inspiring, and we hope that you will subscribe to our entire Partner Podcast series. Hello, welcome to the Independent Curriculum Group's Partner Podcast. This is our inaugural Partner Podcast, and I am very delighted to be here. My name is Peter Gao. I'm the Executive Director of the Independent Curriculum Group and the host of the Partner Podcast series. Joining us today as our guest is Mariandel Huffert of the Agnes Irwin School in Greater Philadelphia. And I'm excited to have Mariandel here because she is not only an experienced educator, but also the director of the Center for the Advancement of Girls at Agnes Irwin School. So thank you, Mariandel Huffert, for joining us for the Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast today. It's really a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Peter. The pleasure is all mine.
Well, I'd like to start out by just having you tell us a little bit about Agnes Irwin School, please. Some history, demographics, mission, values, that sort of thing. The basics. Yep.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. We are an all-girls school about 12 miles west of Philadelphia. We were founded in 1869 by Miss Agnes Irwin herself. We are pre-K through 12th grade. We educate about 620 girls. Our Miss Agnes Irwin was the great-great-granddaughter of Ben Franklin. She was also the first dean of Radcliffe College, and really a pioneer in the education of girls and young women at a time when educating girls was not the norm. In fact, it was fairly subversive to do so. In 1885, so actually after the school was founded, Bryn Mawr College was founded, and Agnes Irwin changed the curriculum to make it more college preparatory so that girls could actually sit for the entrance exam for Bryn Mawr. So we're still down the road from Bryn Mawr College, and we share a zip code, and we're, it's a wonderful place to be at this area. Our school's mission is that we empower girls to learn, to lead, and to live a legacy. And I'm going to say that even though that mission statement is fairly new in terms of its formulation, the values that are embedded in that have been a part of what we do at Agnes Irwin for almost 150 years. We believe that there's great joy in discovering girls for girls to discover their best selves in everything that they do. We believe that we can both challenge and nurture girls, and that there is not a tension that exists between those two. We give them a lot of room to discover who they are. And like I like to say at Agnes Irwin, we don't say why, we say why not. And there are many examples of how that manifests itself in our daily lives. Our girls come from over 75 zip codes, so we have a wide variety of backgrounds and heritage, experience, and points of view that come together here. And our girls are passionate about things like the arts, but also athletics, about robotics, computer science, the classics, financial literacy, etc., etc. And our alums are just incredibly engaged and love everything, you know, about the school, and that connectivity that I mentioned before is something that we find among our alumni as well.
Fantastic. And how did you come to Agnes Irwin? What, can you talk a little bit about your path to the school and the work you're doing now?
Sure. So I came to Agnes Irwin. I'm about to start my eighth year here, and I was hired to develop this Center for the Advancement of Girls. And I'd like to say that at the time, this was just a string of words to which we needed to attach some meaning. And that meaning, I believed, and I believe now still, needed to be grounded in the values and the culture of the institution that I serve. And so I was really attracted to the girl-centered values of the institution. So in my career, I have been driven by this singular purpose to do the right thing for kids. No matter what school or organization I was in, it was always about doing the right thing for kids. And, you know, Peter, every single year when our new crop of teachers and faculty and staff come in, I share with them your letter to new teachers, which I know is widely shared. But what I love so much about it is this this core sense, this core value of delighting in children and their educational journeys. And so it really resonates for me, because that is also who I am, and I hope that others see that as well. And my academic background, I was a classics major, so my first jobs were as a Latin teacher, actually. And so being a classicist in that sense gave me sort of an analytical and disciplined approach to things, which has served me well in life and certainly in this position as well. But I also then went back to school and became a counselor. I have a counseling degree, and that has given me a stance that is aimed at knowing and understanding and listening deeply. And so those things combined with my real excitement for new ideas. And if you look at some of the things I've done in my life, my creative endeavors, it's for me, that means bringing the best of research and innovation to life for kids. That's what brought me to this job, and this was the job that I really wanted. Because, you know, when you're creative and you want to do the right thing for kids, you have to be optimistic. I mean, you can't
Amen.
Be right. You have to, so the optimism is just keeps me going, and it's an exciting job. There's never a dull moment, so to speak. That's it. It's all about moving forward and looking ahead.
Well, I really want to talk today a little bit more about the Center for the Advancement of Girls and how the center represents aspects of what we call independent and innovative educational practice as it's carried out at Agnes Irwin. I noticed that the tagline for the Center for the Advancement of Girls is research, action, and excellence. And I'm wondering, there's no and, what is the Center for the Advancement of Girls and why does it exist? But more importantly, maybe, how do research and action play into its work?
Mm-hmm. Okay, great question. So I already said, you know, when we started the center, it was a string of words to which we had to attach meaning. We really are the research and development arm of the school. And in all the programs we develop, we use research and we use the power of partnerships to bring programs to life. And those programs are aimed at creating the most advantageous environment for girls. So we're really an institutional infrastructure that brings girl-centered research to guide our pedagogy in our classrooms, to guide the development of new programs, class offerings, and we're, you know, I have this Cracker Jack team that collaborates with me, but also really with the school to innovate what we do and always look at what is already here and has worked really well for a really long time because it's in our DNA, and enhance it and take it to the next level. So as I said, we do our work through research programs and partnerships. And if you'd like, I can give you a couple of examples of how we have done that work.
Oh, yes, please.
So one of the programs that I am particularly proud of was actually brings all three of these pillars together, research programs and partnerships. So there's the research tells us, for example, that there's a dearth of women in leadership positions across industries, and really in certainly in this country, but in many countries around the world. And so we wanted to, because it is part of our mission, of the school's mission, and also one of the most important components of the center's work, we wanted to push back and figure out a way to develop leadership identity in girls, because we believe that if you believe you can be it, then you can be it. So so what we did was we partnered with Bryn Mawr College's Graduate School of Social Work and Social Research, and about 5 years ago involved a group of lower school faculty and administrators with the center and the Bryn Mawr Graduate School of Social Work and Social Research. And we said, it through participatory action research, we said, so how do we now create a program that looks at girls, young girls, lower school girls, and leadership identity? And out of that came a program that we call L3, or Living Leadership in the Lower School, which is fully integrated into our lower school. And we don't have leadership class. We don't talk to the girls about how you run a meeting and how you set an agenda, but we talk about the attributes of a leader. So we say, for example, that a leader is resilient. And so we and teachers have the ability to use the traits of a leader, the attributes of a leader, in any which way they would like. So I, for example, seen teachers make it part of their language arts lessons. So they'll read a book like The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, and they'll the teacher says, what leadership attributes does the character have to tap into in order to be successful? So for our youngest girl, so because some of our girls are obviously 4 and 5 years old, and when you talk about some of these concepts, which are not very tangible, we have created a physical toolkit in which every single attribute is paired not only with a definition, but also with an object. So resiliency is paired with a bouncy ball, because we teach the girls that in order for the ball to bounce back, it actually has to hit the floor. So in order to be resilient, you have to face a challenge. So this program has become such a deeply integrated part of our lower school that you can hear five-year-olds say, talk about being resilient in the hallway, and they'll say, I'm not going to cry right now. I'm going to practice my resiliency. And then we get them into middle school and we still hear them use that terminology. Some of the other things that we talk about are reflective thinking, for example, is another attribute. We say that good leaders are know themselves. And so we have the object that's paired with that attribute is a mirror, so that we can, that we can teach the youngest girls about what that means. And so that's one example of how we've brought research and action and research programs and partnerships together. And now we're taking it to the middle school, where we've started created a sort of a 2.0, and we have a series of workshops for fifth and sixth grade girls, and they're voluntary, and we just take these concepts, and we create. My wonderful program manager creates these workshops, curricula around that. So, for example, instead of kindness, which is one of the attributes that we teach the girls in lower school, the workshop becomes something called Are You Feeling All the Feels? Because we know that that's the kind of language and those are the kinds of things that middle school girls are going to be interested in. Reflective thinking becomes how do you see your selfie? We've taken this research and we've said, okay, our girls all have the capacity to be leaders, but we need to give them an opportunity to develop that identity.
I love the idea of identity, because usually when you hear people talking about leadership education, it's about skills. And
yep.
Seeing it as something that's really a whole part of the kid, of the girl,
yep.
rather
yep.
than being a set of, you know, sort of checklist skills that you've acquired is really, you know, takes it so much more deeply. And I just love the idea of kids, you know, practicing their resiliency at age 4 and 5. I think that's just wonderful and so exciting and so built around kids and
yep.
who kids are developmentally yep. and individually. I think that's fabulous. I'm wondering if you could talk, Marianne, a little bit about some of the ideas, books, thought leaders, whatever it might be, other resources that have inspired you, have inspired the Center for the Advancement of Girls, and other people involved with the center and with the school. I think for our purposes in the Partner Podcast, I think it's going to be a critical resource that we want to help develop is to let people know. So who have you been reading? Who do you listen to?
Sure.
Who's behind it all? What are the big ideas? And the specifics, too.
So I think that I'm always looking for the new great ideas. And there are some people who have really influenced me. So one of my big inspirations is Rachel Simmons, who's the author of Odd Girl Out. As well as The Curse of the Good Girl. She has a new book coming out next, I think in the fall. It's called Enough as She Is. She's really shaped a lot of our thinking here, especially around our wellness programming. Our girls in the upper school participated in a study with her last year on perfectionism and support-seeking behaviors. On the other hand, at the same time, there are these unbelievable up-and-coming voices. Young people just get me very energized. And there's a young woman, Caitlin Grasso, who is she's the founder and executive director of Generation, which is a platform for young girl leaders, and she is at age 24, has more wisdom and has more lessons to share than many people who are double her age. So she is someone that I always keep an eye on. I always keep up with her. I just got to see her this past week, and despite the fact that she's been enormously successful, she is also incredibly humble and has a real sense of gratitude for the people who've helped her along the way. And that is a value that I think we need to instill in our definitely in our girls as well. I have a, I'm in my office and I have a wall of women who I call my wall of women firsts. And I have pictures of women who did something for the first time, because it is on the shoulders of these women that we have the opportunities that we enjoy today. So I have, you know, Shirley Chisholm, but also Ursula Burns, who is the first African-American woman to CEO of a Fortune 500 company. I have Jerry Cobb, who was a member of Mercury 13, but who was not allowed to go up into space. So it's not, it is about learning from the people who came before, but also the people who are guiding the way in the future. So I also love Chimamanda Adichie. I think that we should all be feminists. This is little book that is, I have it on my coffee table, and I give it to I give it to a number of our students when they graduate, if they've been involved with our Council for the Advancement of Girls, which is our upper school group that is connected to the center. And I love, I mean, I, you know, I, somebody asked me recently, if I could be anyone for a day, who would I want to be? I think I would want to be Miss Adichie, because I just want to know what's going on in her head. You know, she is just so brilliant, but she is such a strong communicator, in that she, you know, her language is lyrical, but it is so accessible. And so that's a book that I think everyone needs to read. It's actually a little booklet. I'm trying to think, you know, I'm also really inspired by some of the students that I get to, I get to work with, our students who are just, you know, who come up with ideas that somebody my age may not consider. What is the norm for them is not necessarily the norm for all the grown-ups around here. So I had a couple of years ago, I had two then juniors come into my office and say, so we hear you're putting together a conference on STEM and we need to be a part of it. And as I said earlier, you know, at Agnes Irwin, we say, we don't say why, we say why not. And I said, so what did you have in mind? They said, well, we need to talk to these people. So we're going to do a presentation for your conference. And I said, all right, okay, let's talk. And Peter, they just stole the show. They were the highlight of this conference. They were smart. They were funny. They had 150 adults creating this giant geometric sculpture while they were telling them all about why STEM was important for girls and how to reach girls in STEM.
Wow.
So that is really inspiring to me. You know, it doesn't just have to come out of a book, but there are a lot of really wonderful, wise women out there that I feel, you know, who are important for me to keep in mind when I do my work.
I think that's wonderful, and to acknowledge the degree to which our students inspire us and challenge us, all of the things that we want to have happen in our careers and in our personal and professional lives, and students can do that, and we just have to give them permission to do that and to acknowledge that role.
Yep.
As being so important.
Yeah, sometimes we just need to get out of their way.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, I'm just going to take a little break here for a second and say that my name is Peter Gao. This is the Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. And we are interviewing today, or talking today, with Mariandel Hufford of the Agnes Irwin School, who's the director of their Center for the Advancement of Girls. And I'm going to jump into a couple of questions that relate a little bit to the ICG and our work, but I think have larger significance than that, maybe. And it seems to me that the work of educating girls and women, which has sometimes been seen as revolutionary and, as you said, subversive in many cultures, including our own, and we live in a problematic time in that area, but it's really in the spotlight as the condition of girls and women is challenged by global political and cultural trends here in the U.S. by the unleashing of so many anti-woman sentiments. And I know that these sentiments have been around, but somehow we find ourselves living in a world where people who have ideas that perhaps have been not given a lot of airspace suddenly are taking the airspace rather shamelessly. And several of the independent curriculum groups, principles of independent curriculum, the ones that talk about wellness and balance, and the ones that talk about independent curriculum being inclusive and just, try to address the social and I think even the political context of education. And I've got a couple of questions relating to this, and I know the questions are kind of lengthy, but let me go to the first one here. The people I know in all-girls schools these days are really universally concerned over the way in which society both objectifies young women and at the same time places individual young women under enormous pressure to conform to certain expectations, whether it's relating to physical appearance or to their attainments and their own expectations. And I think these educators see, as you've mentioned with regard to the Simmons' work, perfectionism is kind of a growing area of concern. They point to the current curriculum and especially the college admission process, combined with the social pressures of adolescence, as often inflicting real damage on female students. Is the Center for the Advancement of Girls at Agnes Irwin looking at ways in which the curriculum and the way in which kids are prepared not just for college, but for the exigencies, I hate to say it, of college admission, ways that these can be adjusted and maybe corrected to make learning environments and experiences that exhilarate and inspire kids and that just don't take away their lives by burying them under homework and other expectations?
Sure. So you've said a lot, and let me see if I...
Yes, I have. I'm sorry.
No. This it's interesting that this is the conversation we're having today. Uh-huh. I just this week was at the NCGS conference, National Coalition of Girls Schools Conference, where the theme was innovation, building cultures of innovation. And obviously, so girls' schools are... I think by nature, we're just places where we just like to push the envelope. And I think it's because of so many of us were founded by these women who were revolutionary at the time mm-hmm. that they founded our school. So we do want it. We are always looking. We don't take our hands off the steering wheel and we don't rest on our laurels. But if you think about innovation, what struck me at this conference and all the sessions I went to were so good. But what struck me was no matter where these girls' schools were located that had representatives there presenters there, no matter whether they were from Australia or from the Philadelphia area or from Tennessee, this idea of failure and what we were calling failing forward was something that we were all grappling with, because you can't be innovative if you're not willing to fail, risk failure, right? And for girls, that's a particularly tough nut to crack, because as you said, there does tend to be, our girls are under enormous pressure to be effortlessly perfect, to quote Rachel Simmons, in every single domain of their lives, athletically, academically, socially, romantically, you name it. They have to, it all has to seem perfect. And what Rachel Simmons' recent work is really bearing out, and the study that we participated in last year was really bearing out, is that if girls have tend toward perfectionism, they are less likely to seek support. They're more likely to say, I've got it all under control, it's all good. They tend to be, they're more likely to hide their feelings. And so you're now setting yourself up for a person who's a girl whose experience is less likely to then take an academic risk, right?
Yeah.
So, because if you take a risk, you might fail. And so this has repercussions for so many of the decisions that we make in schools. And little decisions like, do we give girls and families access to online grade books, which seems like a real, it could just be, you could see it as a transparency of process. You might want to ask questions like, is this, what unintended consequences might come from this? Is this, would this feed into girls striving just for the grade, for the A? Therefore, will they, you know, will this increase their perfectionistic behaviors? Therefore, will they be less likely to take risks? Therefore, will they be less likely to seek support? And therefore, will their stress level increase, whether it is for the grade or if this is for the college process? So in our school, we have really, you know, we have this amazing college counseling office. I will say total disclosure here, full disclosure, my daughter is entering her senior year at Agnes Irwin. So I am in the throes of this. But I will say she is my third child and my only child to have gone to Agnes Irwin. And I am just finding this process, by comparison, so much less stressful because I am not, this is, my daughter is in the driver's seat. And I think that her, you know, and I think of the college counselor is her co-pilot. And I am, you know, I am just the, I'm support staff. And I just love it. I love how there is a way in which our college counseling office has conversations with girls that tries to depersonalize. This is a deeply personal and deeply emotional process. And yes, it taps into all of the anxieties and all of the worries that both parents and girls have. But what I've seen in this relationship between my daughter and the college counselor is that she in some ways is able to depersonalize this process, in which she says, so you're not, if you don't get selected to attend this school, she puts it in the, you know, a context of number, it's a numbers game. And somehow it is calming. Instead of my daughter walking out of the, and me walking out of her office thinking, oh my gosh, you know, 23% acceptance rate, oh my gosh, it's really more about, oh, well, yeah, it's only 23% acceptance rate. So it's okay if she doesn't get in, it's fine. You know, there's going to be another place where she will get in. So it's not part of, we don't see it as the goal. We see it as a process. So it's not about, it's not results oriented in the sense of, you have to, and I know that this is your background, Peter, so I'm probably just preaching to the choir here, but I feel like the fact that this process of learning who she is as a person and learning who, what her passion is in life and just discovering that and working with the college counseling office to get there, it's an art and it's a science, and I love watching it unfold.
Well, Mariano, just saying, as a former college counselor, hearing you say this as a parent is such music to my ears, because in theory that's what the process is really all about at its best. And it's not just this kind of zero-sum numbers game, which so many right. people see it as. But this also makes me think, and this is, I didn't touch on this in our previous conversation, but that there must be a fair amount of parent education that goes on through, certainly at Agnes Irwin and through the center, to help families understand this. I mean, I can imagine parents of the 4-year-old thinking about the bouncy ball as the model for resiliency. You know, that same kid at the age of 17 going into senior year and thinking about college. Do you help parents a lot with understanding?
Yeah, in a variety of ways. I mean, this is, this is not part of the center's work, but I just have to give a shout out to our college counseling office. They do have, starting in ninth grade, they meet with parents, and, you know, they have a parent evening called the four, I'm going to get the name of it wrong. It's not the four-year road to college, but it's essentially the name of it is really about the process that the journey that the girls are embarking on in ninth grade, and they they work with parents all through the along the way, but they also really emphasize that we as parents, we are not in the driver's seat. We are not the captain of this ship. The girls are the captains of this one. So it's a really, that is, that's sort of drummed into us as parents from the beginning. And then we bring in speakers as well. And those speakers, I do through the center, we do bring in a number of speakers who address the kinds of issues that you've just brought up in our conversation. So we've had Rachel Simmons, but we've also had Rosalind Wiseman, who's talked to us, and actually, and that was in partnership with our local public school district. We've had a conversation about how to create cultures of dignity. We've had, so every this year we're bringing a psychologist from the University of Pennsylvania in to talk about being some more positive parenting strategies. So, I hope that overall, all of these interactions that we have with our parents, all of these conversations do emphasize that we are in partnership with our parents. And as a parent, I do know how what the challenges are. I have three children, and I get it. We had through the center had an evening this past year where we had a community read on social media and girls, and then our head of school, who is a neuroscientist, did a wonderful presentation on how technology and social media impacts the brain, and so the parents actually asked for her to do it to do the presentation for our students, and I think she might do that because it is so powerful to see the brain science behind it. So it's a conversation. We also have our older girls talk to parents of younger girls. That is a really powerful way to do that. And that is something that our upper school does really. I mean, our upper school administration is very strong in making sure that our girls' voices are heard and are front and center. And that they not only, help each other peer to peer, but that they also talk to the parents of middle school students, for example.
That's fantastic. And I think that's exactly the kind of model of education that is really inclusive, but also innovative. Again, this acknowledgement that kids have ideas, that the girls see things and understand their own experience in ways that they can communicate more effectively than other people. I'm actually going to sort of jump ahead to what I guess is sort of one of my later questions. And that is that, there's the Center for the Advancement of Girls, which has a name that I think really kind of stakes a claim on a particular approach and a particular and saying that something is important that I think people know is important, that nowadays when we say something like this is important, sometimes people think, well, it's important and you don't think other things are. But I don't believe that's in any way the case with the Center for the Advancement of Girls at Agnes Irwin. But I guess what I'm thinking of, the work you're doing, is there a way that or is there a hope that the kind of work you're doing will spread either through the work you're doing and the programs that are starting up at Agnes Irwin, going and appearing at other schools, other educational realms? Because I think the advancement of girls advances the lives of everybody.
So our leadership program in lower school is one we've shared widely about, and we continue to share about. My hope is that we will be able to publish a curriculum for middle school, those middle school leadership workshops. That's something that I'd like to start working. We only started those 2 years ago, so in this year three, I think we can start to look at what has worked and what we need to improve and start to draft a curriculum that we can then share widely as well. I'm always talking about our girls because they're so awesome. So forgive me for going back to them, but they just in this past year were the inaugural recipients of the Moulton Grant for Global Leadership, and that was actually the grantor is Meg Moulton, who is the co-founder of NCGS, and with that grant it was really fabulous. I did not work directly with these six girls, and they volunteered for it. But there was this wonderful group of advisors, because our teachers are so committed. This group of advisors worked with them throughout the course of the year to think about what global leadership means to them. And it was a really wonderful process where in the beginning they were very solution focused, and they were talking about apps, and, you know, they were I'm not even sure what they were creating an app for, but they were creating an app. But then over time, they started to see that, you know, there's a lot of leadership that lives here at Agnes Irwin. And could they take that and in a culturally sensitive and responsible way, figure out how to spread the work that we do here to a partner school in another part of the world. And so part of the grant was that they needed to find girls in an underserved part of the world. And so they partnered with a school in Tanzania, a girls' school in Tanzania. And over the course of the year had multiple, they did the research here. They went to our lower school and they sat in on assemblies. They talked to fourth graders over pizza. They talked to teachers. They did lots of Skype conversations with the girls in Tanzania and talked about what does a leader mean to you and what are the traits that are important to you in your setting. They learned about, for example, that being the head garden girl is really important in this school because the garden is where most of the food comes from for the girls who board there. And they talked about what role models they had in their lives and which women leaders they admired. And so this has been this process and this journey for them. And then they got to that will continue on next year. They got to present at the NCGS conference. I was so proud of them. Like we say here, you made Agnes proud. So they were amazing. They were so enthusiastic. And it was wonderful that Meg Moulton was in the audience and could hear what they were doing. And she was really, think she was really pleased. But I have to say what's so cool was afterwards they came up to me and they said, Miss Hufford, here's what we need to do. And I love when they do that. They said, we want to, next year, we want to take this leadership toolkit in the lower school, and we need to make it we need to make a middle school version for it because it works so well in the lower school, but we need to add some traits, and we need to figure out how to make it really relevant to middle school girls, and we want to take the lead on that. And I said, all right, you just come see me in September, and we'll get this started. So that is the kind of thing that I think is that's how the work spreads. But, you know, and I also hope that our upper school girls, for example, have an initiative they call Girls Can, which is Councils for Advancement Network, and they try to start network. They try to start councils for the advancement of girls, which are student councils in schools in around the country. So there are different ways in which we spread the word, but I would say that the most important for in terms of the grown-ups, I think we need to know what the research on girls is, and we need to know how to apply it in our schools in ways that are relevant and immediately relevant, but also understand that I think you've touched on that. That a rising tide lifts all boats, because if we do the right thing for girls, we're going to have a more just and inclusive world.
Well, I guess that sort of raises for me the question that may sound kind of crazy. Have you been in contact or any thought? I mean, I'm thinking about all boys schools that I think could reshape some of the concepts of masculinity that the kids grow up with in the culture with the same kind of thoughtful and research-based approach that you're doing. Is there a way for all boys schools or co-ed schools to kind of take up the same banner of advancing kids, because it's, it is advancing humanity.
Yeah. So I think that there are schools around the country that have similar but not the same program. I want to say that our brother school, the Haverford School, which is obviously all boys, they have done quite a bit of very nice work on leadership development in boys and what that looks like. They don't have a center for the advancement of boys per se, but they do. They do have dedicated resources and personnel who look at programs that are, that we sort of house under the center, and they are. We always talk to one another. So, I can't think of. That's really the only boys' school that I am. Familiar with, so I can't tell you that there are others out there. But I would say that if we, I'm going to go back to what I said at the very beginning of this conversation, if you do the right thing for kids, it's all good. Mm-hmm. And that's what needs to get, as educators, we need to delight in the messiness of that work. We need to feel and see and love the joy of it. And also the heartache that comes with it. But and if that can be grounded in research and not just anecdote, then we're think about what incredible environments we're shaping, and think about what incredible opportunities we give our kids.
Well, I kind of like the idea of all schools becoming essentially centers for the advancement of humanity. Isn't that what we're all in this business to do?
Yep, absolutely.
So I guess kind of my final question is, how can the Independent Curriculum Group, how can this network of schools not just support the work you're doing at Agnes Irwin, but also the greater task of supporting the center's ideals and objectives at all kinds of schools in the way we're just talking about? What could we be doing? What could I be doing? What do I need to know to be better and more helpful and more of an ally and supporter? And what can the Independent Curriculum Group as a whole do to be more of an ally and supporter?
That's a great question. I would say that we're always stronger together. And I would, one of the areas that I think a lot of people are getting more and more interested in, and I think it's one that we have to explore and we have to commit to, is this idea of creating partnerships across boundaries, mm-hmm. but also partnerships among schools. And it is something that I'm particularly interested in. We have just hired this past week a director of strategic partnerships. And so this is something that is definitely a priority for us. Because if you have, you know, think about how you increase the resources and opportunities if you, you know, exponentially, really, if you are able to combine your resources and your expertise. So that is an area that I think that if we could have, you know, your support in facilitating that, I don't know what that looks like. And but that would be really something that is that is something that we're really interested in. Another thing is that we are stepping away from the APs, as I know many schools are around the country. And that is both exhilarating and risky. And you know, to have the support of the members of the Independence Curriculum Group, those people who are on that same path, again, having the research and the facilitation to back that up would be awesome. So, I'm trying to think of, you know, this idea of research, of always ask, of thinking about the unintended consequences of our decisions and making our decisions.
I love that.
Based on research is really, is something that I would like to encourage all schools to do. And I think that in co-ed schools, I would urge co-ed schools to ensure that their girls have the opportunities also to be the leaders and, you know, participate in STEM programming the way that they do in girls' schools, where obviously all leadership positions are filled by girls, and the robotics team is made up of only girls. And so those are some of the thoughts I would have around that.
Well, that's terrific. Well, thank you so much and for that. And we will, we of the Independent Curriculum Group will do all we can to support your work. And it starts by having people listen to this podcast, I hope. So...
That's great. Well, thank you, Peter.
Well, Mariandel Hufford, thank you so much for your time today, and more importantly for the work you're doing at the Center for the Advancement of Girls at Agnes Irwin School, because the work you're doing does support, promote, and enact the principles of independent curriculum. Listeners to our podcast, we will be posting Mariandel's contact information along with the pricey of the podcast so that those of you who have been engaged and inspired by this conversation, as I have, can follow up with their own questions and maybe share some ideas and resources to further promote this work.
Thank you. Well, Peter, it has been my pleasure, my privilege, and I am so excited to have had this conversation with you on a Friday afternoon.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this Independent Curriculum Group Partner Podcast. I'm Peter Gao, Executive Director of the ICG, hoping that you will listen to the entire ICG Partner Podcast series, and wishing you all the best in your own journey toward the future of education.